Wait, you changed your name to McLovin? McLovin? What kind of a stupid name is that, Fogel? What, are you trying to be an Irish R&B singer?
Oh, they let you pick any name you want when you get down there.
And you landed on McLovin?
Yeah, I was between that and Muhammad.
Why the fuck would it be between that or Muhammad? Why don't you just pick a common name like a normal person?
Muhammad is the most commonly used name on Earth. Read a fucking book for once.
Fogel, have you ever actually met anyone named Muhammad?
Have you actually ever met anyone named McLovin?
No, that's why you picked a dumb fucking name.
Fuck you.
Give me that.
All right. You look like a future pedophile in this picture, number one. Number two, it doesn't even have a first name. It just says McLovin.
What? One name? One name? But who are you, Seal?
Fogel, Zygi says you're 25 years old. Why wouldn't you just put 21, man?
Seth, listen up, ass face. Every day, hundreds of kids go into the liquor store with their fake IDs, and every single one says they're 21. Just how many 21-year-olds do you think there are in this town? It's called fucking strategy, all right?
Let's stay calm, okay? Let's not lose our heads. It's a fine ID. It's gonna work. It's passable, okay? This isn't terrible. I mean, it's up to you, Fogel. This guy's either gonna think here's another kid with a fake ID, or here's McLovin, the 25-year-old Hawaiian organ donor. Okay? So what's it gonna be?
I am McLovin.
Pre-recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, US of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
Hey, McFly! What do you think you're doing? Hey, I'm talking to you, McFly, you Irish bug.
Oh, hey, Biff. Hey, guys. How are you doing?
You got my homework finished, McFly?
Well, actually, I figured since it wasn't due till Monday.
Hello? Hello? Anybody home? Hey, think, McFly.
Think. I gotta have time to recopy. Do you realize what would happen if I hand in my homework in your handwriting? I'd get kicked out of school. You wouldn't want that to happen, would you? Would you?
Well, now, of course, not. I wouldn't want that to happen.
What are you looking at, butthead?
Hey, Biff, get hold of this guy's life preserver. Dork thinks he's gonna drown.
Yeah. So, how about my homework, McFly?
Okay, Biff. Well, I'll finish that on up tonight, and then I'll, bring it over first thing tomorrow morning.
Hey, not too early. I sleep in Sunday. Oh, McFly, your shoes are tied. Don't be so gullible, McFly.
Okay.
I don't want to see you in here.
Okay. All right, bye-bye.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
Yep.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
Hello. It's been 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be intensely rusty at this today. McFly...
Hello, McFly.
That's just so great.
Best movie ever.
Yeah, it really is. And, of course, I borrowed that reference yesterday for the Huffington Post.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Because the president is absolutely George McFly. I don't know what the hell he's doing. I don't know what the hell is going on. But the preemptive concessions, the preemptive capitulation is... It's exhausting.
Yeah.
And more than a little confounding.
Yep.
I can't
do the Republicans' homework there, Mr. President, and they sleep in on Sundays.
That's right. Because, you know, they're all about compromise. You meet them halfway and they're going to just kick you in the ass.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just a little bit closer to their knee so they can slam it into your crotch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a little bit closer. Move a little closer because they didn't get all of your balls this time. Oh, man. And before that, my other favorite Mick character, MC character.
McLovin. Oh, I see the connection now.
Yeah, see? Get it?
McLovin and McFly. Yeah.
80s nerd versus 2000s nerd.
Yeah, oh, how the times have changed.
I love that movie, Superbad.
Yeah, I did too. It's watchable. It's I think, the best of the Apatow bunch.
Just laugh and laugh and laugh. Because haven't we all... I mean, that's basically like... It's timeless. It's like everybody in high school.
Yeah.
Everybody in high school. Guys, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, and just the relationship between what's-his-face and the other what's-his-face. It's just... right. I mean, it's just a great... It's a little long. Those Apatow movies tend to run too long. That's my only... comedy, I think, has a built-in 90-minute... stop time, you know, like you really can't push a good comedy past the 90-minute, 100-minute threshold. Yep. And those Apatow movies tend to go a full 2 hours. And I think that's a little, I think you need an editor in there. I think that's a little up your own ass to go 2 hours on a
concept. You see Funny People?
I did. Yeah. I mean, it was enjoyable.
Yeah.
I don't need to see it again. I mean, that's my watermark for movies. If it's something I need to own or see again, it's a great movie. But you know, I thought Sandler was good and Rogan was good, and you know, it was a decent movie.
Yeah, but it ended about halfway through. I mean, I loved it.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought it was great.
It was too fucking long.
Well, it was too. Yeah, it was too long. And suddenly the crisis was resolved.
Yeah,
like the halfway mark. And suddenly, I don't mean to. Here's a spoiler warning. Spoiler warning. If you haven't seen Funny People, stop your podcast and advance it about 30 seconds.
Yeah, but it's not fucking six. You know, the Sixth Sense. So
Sandler doesn't die,
right?
Yeah, his
Bruce
disease
Willis
is cured.
Dies, but Sandler doesn't.
right. Sandler in Funny People actually survives the disease. It's actually
and
cured.
The girl in the Crying Game has a dick.
right.
Oh, I'm sorry. Spoiler alert.
He sees dead people, and Bruce Willis is a dead person.
Can you imagine? Here's an interesting thought. The Crying Game could never have worked in the internet age.
No.
The Crying Game would have been the biggest flop in the internet age. But how amazing was it that secret stayed secret for as long as it did? I saw it maybe 6 weeks into its release. Mm-hmm. And had not heard from anyone that the chick had a dick.
That's exactly what it'd be all over Twitter that day, the day it came out. Every tweet would be, I mean, all of Twitter, everyone would be tweeting, the chick has a dick.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd just be over and over again.
It would be hashtag crying game, chick has a dick.
Chick has a dick.
Right?
Right.
And it would be trending. And you'd be like, oh, well, fuck, I don't need to see that movie now. You know, and this sort of this is a nice segue into WikiLeaks because now everything is, I mean, it's forced transparency. Mm-hmm. You just cannot have, you know, a Sixth Sense or, I mean, there's just, everyone loves to, life now, the world is a giant spoiler alert. Like it's just, oh, guess what? Spoiler alert. Hillary Clinton is on the phone with Kim Jong-il. Giving him a reach around. Oops, spoiler alert.
That's right.
It's like, what the fuck? Everything, and it goes down to our personal lives. Everything we say and do is out there on some fucking hard drive.
Podcast.
Somewhere. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, we just tend to talk about it out loud, not hide. But I'm saying, we're just, our children are going to, well, my, you know, yours is almost an adult, but mine is only 8. I mean, it will be no such thing as privacy.
Right.
In any way, as long as you're on the grid. And I am really starting to lean heavily towards completely leaving the grid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just seriously, it's terrifying now.
Yeah.
This, what's going on.
Yeah, so, I mean,
yeah,
I
we
mean,
went
it,
from
yeah.
Crying Game, Chicks with Dicks to WikiLeaks.
Well, I mean, you've got to be so careful anymore. I mean, it's just one, you click one checkbox when you buy something online. And suddenly everything's out there. And that's just the most simple, that's the most simple faux pas.
Yeah.
Once you get into Facebook, I cannot even imagine someone, maybe an older person, getting a computer in 2010 for the first time and going online and, okay, I've got to sign up for Twitter. I'll do that. And, I've got to do Facebook. I got to do that. And let's say that computer is a Windows PC. That person is screwed because they have no idea the etiquette about it. They have no idea the privacy about it. They have no idea about viruses and worms and Trojans and all that crap. They're going to get totally fucked. I mean, within a week, that computer will be unusable and their identity will be everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everywhere.
I mean, and it's and now it's, I mean, that has been a common, you know, interwebs user concern for a decade now. We've all known, but now it's trickled up. It's run up into the levels of government with this WikiLeaks thing, where literally nothing you do, and it doesn't even have to be electronic. I mean, it's the old school typewritten pages that can be photocopied and mailed to Assange, where Julian Assange. He sounds like a Bond villain, doesn't he? Julian Assange. He should be sitting somewhere in a volcano with a bald cat.
Yeah, with a little cat.
Know, or he's bald and the cat's, you know, big furry white cat.
Yeah, he's got like an iron claw or something, you know.
It's and you know, every government on earth, this is the most terrifying man alive right now. Fuck terrorism. This guy does have the power to destroy, you know, government. Like, I mean, they're not in America, because we just don't, we don't care. People here don't care. You could, he could come out with, you know, I won't even say, he could come the worst thing in the world, and everybody would be like, what's on, you know, what's going on the Real Housewives of New Jersey? But in Europe, where they have more homogenous societies and people that give a shit, and where the social infrastructure and the welfare net is bigger, this guy has the potential to overthrow governments mm-hmm. with what he knows, with what he's got. I mean, it's got to be every government. This guy's going to end up under a bus. And
Someday
we're going to hear. I mean, he's going to end up meeting with a tragic, tragic plummet.
Well,
he's going to fall 10 stories onto a spike by accident.
Well, I blogged about that the other day. I mean, this guy's got to have serious protection because his life is easily in danger. And when he starts going, I mean, going after governments is one thing. But, I mean, he's going to start going over to the banks. These guys.
Oh, we get the International. You ever see that movie with Clive Owen, The International?
Yeah,
good movie. That's going to be him. A bank is going to go, what's the going rate on a hitman?
Yeah.
And they'll go, it's $1 million. Okay, let's send George Clooney.
That's right.
They'll put a bullet in him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is he rich? I don't know really anything about him other than that somebody said he's a pedophile. Does he have a lot of money?
You know, there's a Time magazine thing that I've been meaning to read, and I haven't read it yet. I think it was out this week. A Time magazine thing about it? No, was it? Maybe it was Forbes. I mean, there's something in Time that that I've got a link sitting, a tab waiting that I'd like to read, but I haven't gotten around to it.
I hope brother's got a lot of money, because I'm torn about it. I mean,
yeah, me too.
I'm all about transparency, but on the other hand, you know, diplomacy, the very nature of diplomacy is cloak and dagger.
Yep.
I mean, it's, you cannot in good faith bargain with other sovereign states with everything on the table and everybody and pointing cameras at it, right? I mean, that's why you don't have cameras in the State Department meeting rooms where, you know, this stuff happens. You've got to have some discretion.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, some dirty tricks go on. That's just, and I think a lot of it is proving that, hey, we've got diplomacy happening. We've committed diplomacy. We're doing some actually smart things.
Yep.
Like the whole thing about how Obama put the fucking pressure on China to with the sanctions in the UN Security Council over Iran. That was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
The, you know, making back channel deals to make sure that China doesn't get cut off from Iranian oil if they put these sanctions on. I mean, that's diplomacy. Bam.
Yeah.
Hey, look at us. We're making diplomacy. So, I don't know.
Well, the fact of the matter is,
I think it's going to, the real danger is it's going to change the way government and business works.
Yeah, they're just going to become more secretive. It's going to become more tight-lipped. And that's one of my concerns. The other concern is some things are meant to be secret. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
For example, Valerie Plame, what she was doing, that was meant to be secret. She was covering nuclear non-proliferation. That has to remain secret, because as soon as it's out there, as soon as her identity is out there, people are in danger. All right. But at the same time, there are things that, you know, it'd be nice to know about, you know, some of the malfeasance in Iraq or Afghanistan. And so, I get very concerned when information is just flooded into the population indiscriminately, without sort of an agenda, without, well, we have sort of this issue area that we're covering, and here are some things. It becomes almost, it just becomes destructive.
Well, and I think the modus operandi of it and the motive behind it, like I'm thinking about Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers, right?
I
mean, that was a pivotal whistleblowing, history changing thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically, have you ever seen that movie, The Most Dangerous Man in the World?
Yeah.
About him, the documentary. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a guy of conscience who couldn't, he had these documents, and it's like, this could literally change the course of a war, of a, you know, of history, of, to change the way America looks at its own government thing. I mean, it had a narrative, and it had a reason behind it, and it was this huge thing. This just, to me, seems like some idiot in the copy room or some douchebag in IT is like, oh, look at this, I'm going to send this to WikiLeaks, woo-hoo! And then, you know, 2 minutes later, I'm going to update my Facebook page. It's like, there's no moral backbone to it. There's no point to it. It's just this indiscriminate, like you said, it's just this clusterfuck of information with no you know, with nobody behind, at least Ellsberg, I mean, that guy had to put his ass on the line.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he had to step up. And, I mean, talk about most wanted. Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
But this, with WikiLeaks, it's all completely unsourced. It's completely anonymous. Nobody has to put their balls out there, except Assange, I guess.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It just seems too scattershot for me, too, you know, too indiscriminate.
Yeah.
There needs to be, there, you know, for I'm all for whistleblowing, but like in that movie with, what was that movie? The
Insider.
The Insider. Yeah. I keep thinking The Informant, which is a completely different movie, which was a great movie. I love that movie, by the way. But yeah, I mean, that guy, seriously, you got to take some risk to put this to, you know, to be a whistleblower, you have to have some ass in the game. And this just seems completely random and childish. I don't know.
Yeah. You know what? I'm still shocked that they didn't assassinate Ellsberg.
I am too.
I mean, look who went after him. G. Gordon Liddy, E. Howard Hunt, Frank Sturgis, those guys.
Those guys are killers.
Those guys are scary. I mean, you know,
they
we talk
put
about
the bullet in you.
There are scary guys, right? Dick Cheney, and you know his whole cabal. Those guys are scary. But when we're talking about the Watergate plumbers, the White House plumbers, those guys. I mean, G. Gordon Liddy is a seriously frightening man.
There's no way that guy hadn't killed somebody.
Oh, he's
there's no way he doesn't have at least one body in his basement somewhere.
The guy, I mean, today he's a doddering old man.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a doddering, I mean, an old man. He is like, I mean, he's got one foot in the grave.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, I mean, he's still got like this ninja blade that he keeps in a ankle holster in his pants.
Wow.
You know, ready to fling that thing out and slice your jugular in one smooth motion.
Yeah. No, I have no doubt that guy would cut a bitch's head off.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, I always tell a story
and
that
it has.
You know, I was terrified. I worked in the same building as that guy, and I was terrified of him. I mean, I couldn't. I literally could not piss.
I wouldn't.
And when he was in the bathroom, it's like, my God, if I was in the bathroom and Liddy walked in, hey there,
High Pockets.
He called me High Pockets because I'm tall.
High Pockets.
High Pockets. Get it? Because I'm tall and my pockets are a little high. And he's a little man. I mean, he's a. I mean, that explains a lot about Liddy. Liddy is maybe 3'8".
Okay.
And that's with the mustache. And so, you know, I'd be in there at the WJFK in the restroom there off the lobby. And that was the only restroom. There wasn't a private restroom for the on-air talent. So Liddy would come striding in there,
"Hey there, High Pockets."
And that would be it. There's no pissing. Cuz you know, I'm thinking because I was with the enemy show. I was with the Don and Mike show.
Yeah, and they were the enemy. I mean, that's not hyperbole.
That's right.
You guys cut into Liddy's shit.
But, I mean, it was a silly radio show. Can you imagine being Daniel Ellsberg and this psychopath? Three of them. I mean, because E. Howard Hunt was just as psychotic, if not more, than all of them combined.
Yeah.
And and then, so, I mean, you got to believe that there are governments, maybe not the American government these days, but there are other governments, maybe the Australians, who are, you know, really going to start pursuing this guy. So I mean,
I'll tell you what WikiLeaks will never see is anything about fucking Israel, because then he'd be done. I mean, the Mossad is probably camped in this guy's fucking coffee.
He's in a bowl of rice waiting to pop out and pop a.
I mean,
cap
Israel. We're talking about Israel is a country where they would monitor their own people's telephone calls during the first Gulf War, and if you were like, you know, some 80-year-old grandma, and you're like, yeah, a Scud just landed. Or, you know, that we got a Scud, we got this Patriot battery right outside the window here. If you said anything about anything, they would throw your ass in jail.
Yeah.
I mean, they would come and get you and throw you in jail. An Israeli citizen just making a plain old phone call about, oh, yeah, there's a Patriot battery 50 yards from here. You're in jail for 5 years.
Yeah.
Done. I mean, they will have absolutely no compunction about putting a spike up this guy's ass if he messes with Israel.
I mean, really, I mean, is there any, I mean, even the most strident supporters of WikiLeaks, I mean, do you really believe that everything is fair game?
Yeah.
That there should be no secrets, like no, you know, national security. What's the law? The National Security Act?
Right. There's obviously a far left wing of us that is, transparency or nothing. You know, it's the zero sum game people. You know, the where they there's absolutely no gray area. It's either black or white. It's the far left. You know, it's extremism on all sides. It's every absolutely. I grew up. I mean, my dad was military intelligence his entire life, and he still won't tell me what he used to do.
Yeah.
What he did for a living. I mean, he would go away and disappear for months and governments would collapse and I'd be, you know, hey dad, what's that? I mean, he wouldn't even things that were in books. He wouldn't, I'd be reading something. Is this true? I can't talk about that. I mean, so I grew up in a military, in an intelligence environment and, you know, there's some things are sacrosanct and you can't operate a major government without diplomacy and without covertness, without spies.
Yeah.
What, keep that shit secret.
I have been reading, I have not been, and deliberately so, reading Greenwald these days.
Yeah.
But what has he been saying? I mean, he's a smart guy. Does he really believe, and I don't know. I don't know for sure. But, I mean, does he really believe that, everything is fair game? Like, we should know everything about everything?
Probably. I haven't read him either. He's exhausting.
Regardless of national security? Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
And not even national security. I mean, there's even levels below that. I mean, just with plain old diplomacy that may not necessarily have anything to do with America's vested, you know, security interests, just financial interests or, you know, just overall global relationship interests that have nothing to do with it. I mean, I think we take national security way too seriously. I mean, what is that? What is the Department of Defense? What were they defending on 9/11? Where were they on 9/11? Mm-hmm. I would think a Department of Defense, you know, there'd be fucking aircraft carriers off of New York and like actually defending us. It's more the Department of Offense. Mm-hmm. We project power.
Yeah.
We camp out in the backyards of places with oil and junk we need.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, when do we defend anything?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a crazy political word, is what it is, and it was created at a time when, rightfully so, Americans were sick of war, and so it ceased to be the Department of War and became the Department of Defense. And
I know. I'm just saying, I don't ever see us defending against it, especially after Iraq. It's much more the Department of Offense, if you ask me.
Yeah,
I mean, it's much more.
God, yeah, I mean,
force protection.
Right, and you know. You constantly hear about, you know what? I don't even want to get into it because I'm going to be accused of hating the troops. What is it that they're specifically defending about American freedoms when they're in Iraq?
Fuck nothing.
Okay. I was just trying to clear that up.
They're defending an Iraqi constitution that guarantees health care to everybody. So you'd rather get shot over there. You'd rather be a civilian over there and get hurt than here.
Yeah.
It's nothing to none of my freedoms being protected over there. Yeah. I mean, more power to them, but you know, don't hate the soldier, hate the mission, but still. And plus, it's all volunteer army. You signed up for it, and most of them like it. Most of them can't wait to get over there and get them some, as they say. Had a kid in the local school system here tell a teacher, and this is kindergarten, mind you, 4 years old. So what's your daddy do? He's a soldier. Oh, where is he? In Iraq. Oh, what does he do there? Kill the dirties, is what he said.
Oh, God, really? Kill
the dirties. I almost fucking lost my mind when I heard that. Kill the dirties.
Oh, my God.
They can't wait. They can't wait to get over there. It's a video game. It's Call of Duty. It's a video game.
Right. That's
for
sure.
You sight down your weapon, you pull the trigger, and maybe you kill some dirties. That's not, you know, sorry. And even the Greatest Generation, those people they had no choice. They had absolutely no choice other than mass desertion, mass, you know, AWOLs. They were plucked up from their hometowns. They were drafted without any choice and thrown at the Germans and the Japanese as cannon fodder. That's, you know, we could win any war on earth right now if that's what we wanted to do, if that's how we did it.
Yeah.
We have an all-volunteer army whose job it is. That's their day-to-day job. So I'm sorry that I don't get all weepy over, you know, support the troops, you know, over the yellow ribbons and whatnot. That's the job they signed up for. Whether or not the government decides to do that with them is, you know, maybe more people had some outrage that it wouldn't happen.
Well, you know, they didn't sign up for backdoor drafts and multiple tours.
Well, no, that's despicable, and every one of those should be a lawsuit waiting to happen. I mean, I don't know how all of that is even legal. I don't know why the courts aren't just full to brimming with you know, lawsuits about that. That's awful. That is awful. And the rotations are awful. And I mean, I can't imagine a guy that's, or a girl, you know, guy or a gal that has to go to Afghanistan, rotate home for a few months, and then go to fucking Iraq or vice versa. I don't know how they do it. It's unbelievable.
As far as just wrapping up on national security, I mean, can you imagine if WikiLeaks had been around, say, during the Cuban Missile Crisis?
Oh, God. We'd be all crispy toast right now.
That's right. That's right. Well, you and I probably wouldn't be here.
Well, no. I mean, it would be, WikiLeaks says that President Kennedy is having backdoor discussions with Khrushchev through diplomatic channels. What? Oh, fuck that. And then there's a coup in Moscow overnight. Khrushchev's out the door. The hardliners step up. Somebody does something stupid. We do something stupid back. Nuclear war.
Exactly.
Done.
So, I mean, that's a good example of where national security and secrecy needs to come into play. There are high-level negotiations happening. Very sensitive eggshell walking that happens, because, you know, I mean, at any time, something, you know, some government could get a wild hair up their ass and invade another government, and you got another Cuban Missile Crisis situation happening. Russia could get a wild hair up their ass, invade Georgia for real, and that would be it. That would be it. Because the way this president has been behaving lately, I don't put anything past him to say, you know, we got to do this. And if I, you know, if I send troops to Georgia to back up the Georgians, you know, the Republicans will love me. Mm-hmm. And the American and all the people who like bipartisanship will love me and embrace me. I mean, I can think of no other calculus Then that is what is happening, because I see nothing that he is getting in return for these concessions. Nothing. Maybe the idea, maybe the process of it, he's getting something done. But what is it? And what is the perception of this president as he's doing this? Now, I say this as a card carrying Obot.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, he's losing me on this. I don't know. I mean, not permanently. But I'm just not, I'm failing to understand the strategy behind all of this. And I was willing to go along with some of the compromise with some of the previous legislation. Cap and trade was, I mean, the energy bill, healthcare, stimulus, all that stuff. There was a need for it because he needed those conservative votes in the Senate.
But a pay freeze on federal employees, fuck that. There's not even,
yeah, exactly. He just comes out and says, well, we're going to freeze. You know what? The misperception is that, and you and I both come from families of people who worked in the federal government. My dad was a lifelong federal employee. My mother was a short-term federal employee until, you know, I was born, and then she quit her job and so forth to raise us. But, you know, they're not robots. They're not animatronic droids who beep, boop, you know, they go around and they do bureaucratic work, and they're, you know, the people in Internal Revenue are a pain in your ass, and you know, they push papers around automatically, and they're not.
They're people with jobs.
They're people with jobs and families and mortgages, exactly.
Yeah. And the last thing you do in a fucking recession when you're the government is go, oh, you know what? Fuck you, people. I mean, we got to keep the wheels turning here, but y'all don't need pay increases for 2 years. I mean, just got the email the other day, yesterday, on my BlackBerry from the CEO of my heartless, faceless corporate colossus that say, oh, you know, things are still tough, so no merit increases in 2011, just like in 2010. Yeah. So I'm now going on 2 years without a cost of living increase, which, you know, it used to just barely wash out the difference in my health care. My health care is going up $700 this year in 2011, and the merit increase would normally, you know, kind of just soften that up a little bit and make it bearable. And meanwhile, I immediately start doing Googling on my CEO to see what he's going to fucking take home next month, next year.
Yeah.
Fuck that. Yeah. It's so disheartening to see that. Every federal employee just got to look at that boss, you know, the president, and go, what the fuck?
Yeah, because it was what you really want to do while there's an unemployment situation where there's issues with jobs.
Yeah.
You really want to start cutting pay. You really want to start, and that's what it is, because the cost of living goes up, and if you freeze the pay, then that amounts to a cut in pay.
Yeah.
That amounts to things.
The cost of, yeah. I mean, and granted, federal employees have typically better back-end benefits, you know, better health coverage and things like that, out of pocket expenses, things like that. But still, it's a drop in a bucket mm-hmm. as far as deficit reduction. I didn't see any numbers on it. I was too disgusted with the headline to look at the details. But what's it going to save? A $1.50 and change?
Yeah, I think it's. I could be horribly wrong on this, but I want to say it was like $8 billion or something like that. Please. I mean, it's literally. I mean, in the grand scheme of things,
in the grand scheme, nothing.
Because when you're talking about making the Bush tax cuts the tax rates for the upper 1 or 2% costing $700 billion unpaid for.
Yeah.
Then, you know, when we're talking about, I don't know, anywhere with $5 to $8 million, somewhere $8 billion, it's completely inconsequential. And what you're doing is you're directly, I mean, it is the most absurd thing. Why, of all things, would he get on television looking, first of all, battered and bloodied? Which was just so symbolic of exactly the intent of that speech.
I know. And I mean, it's a recessionary move. You're now taking however many millions of federal employees that much deeper out of the spending market. The whole point of the whole way you get out of a recession is to get people spending again, to create demand, right? So to give people money to go buy shit. Government. Federal employee spending is basically stimulus in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Why would you stop? Why would you? I just don't get it. It pisses me off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you go, here's an experiment you can try at home. Make sure to wear eye protection. Go to USA.gov. That's the government's official, you know, job board. And check out what federal employees are offered. I mean, first of all, not every federal employee is a senator.
GS-12,
or GS-12, or there's not like deputy IGs. I mean, there are deputy IGs, but a lot
there
of them are.
The
are
vast
like,
majority of them are GS buttfuck nothing
janitors,
you know, civil servants,
right?
That you know are just squeaking by like the rest of us.
Exactly.
I mean, but you're right. It's the impression in it's this inexplicable kowtowing to this loud racist minority. Bitching, white, old, fat, stupid, bitchy fuckheads out there that think that government salaries are somehow welfare for, you know, for government welfare queens driving Cadillacs.
Mm-hmm.
There's just this insidiousness to all of this. I cannot wait until all these baby boomers fucking die. I swear to God, I cannot wait until the first wave of baby boomer deaths just takes us. Like, they just start dropping like flies. It's not happening fast enough.
Mm.
Because that's who we're kowtowing to right now. The next generation, the generation like my nephew, who's in college now, whose buddy from in high school in their senior year sent out a blast text to everyone, multi-texted his entire school. P.S., by the way, BTW, I'm gay. LOL. I mean, literally came out via text, and nobody batted an eye. Mm. That's the generation that needs to step up and start governing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding. The baby boomers are killing this country. They're just – and McCain is who I'm talking about, the McCain type who knows in his brain that he's just – fucking evil and awful. The backpedaling he's doing on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, because it's just this thing that's he just can't understand.
Yeah.
Gay people. Because he's too much of a man.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck it. They got to all die. They got to all die. We got to send them to District 9.
Totally.
Start rounding them up.
Yeah. I've got serious baby boomer issues. And I mean, I honest to God believe, and forgive me, I mean, we have a lot of baby boomer listeners to this podcast, but look, there are present company excluded. Baby boomers, for the most part, have fucked America. I mean, they have sucked down our natural resources. They have sucked down our financial resources, and they're playing mine, mine, mine right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just it. They're running around, these fucking former hippies, running around, you know, with their fucking BMWs and their...
and their social security checks.
Yeah, and their social security checks, and screeching about, you know, keep your government hands off my Medicare. And,
right.
And
as long as they've got their Medicare and they've got their social security, everyone else in the world can go fuck themselves.
Right.
I mean, literally, they would be fine with the moment they die, all social security and all Medicare benefits for everyone else but that person gets turned off.
Mm-hmm.
That's how each one of them feels individually. As long as I got mine, right up to the point where I die, and hurry up and do it, please. They're fine with it. But the second after their termination, yeah. Fuck that. America doesn't. Oh, bootstraps.
They propped us up for greatness, right? In the late 60s, and then they fucking sold out. They sold out.
Absolutely.
They sold out their own principles, and as soon as they hit 1980, it was fuck the middle class. We want ours, and
they got
fuck
theirs.
Everybody else because you know
they had Reagan. They had Reagan as their movie theater icon.
Yeah.
You know, the perfect storm politically. Mm-hmm. They had the roaring 80s, and then they handed us a series of bubbles that we may never get out of.
Yeah,
this just series of retarded
one. After that.
Ridiculous bubbles.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my generation was responsible for, my generation built and popped the internet bubble. I mean, I was right in the middle of that. My uncle, I remember this conversation very clearly. My uncle said, well, you may want to go back to school. And this was at the height. I mean, when I'm lighting cigars with $100 bills, I mean, not barely joking.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But, you know, he's like, well, you might want to take this opportunity and go back to school. And I'm like, you know, fuck you, old man. I'm in the internet business. That's never going away, right? Yeah. I mean, I am the reason that WorldCom, I worked for WorldCom for 6 years. I am the reason they went tits up. My bar tab that I would charge to the company is mm-hmm. the reason WorldCom went fucking bankrupt. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my generation's got its bubbles. But the baby boomers, talk about entitlement. Talk about entitlement.
Well, you know what? We weren't responsible. We got to... God, we're so far behind. We got to get to Bubble Genius here. But I want to get back into this because I've got a thing or two to say.
I'm going to do some real work here while you do this.
I'm absolutely... Yeah, well, good. I'm actually glad we went on this because there's some things to say about it. Today's show, of course, brought to you by Bubble Genius, and it is the Bob and Elvis Show. I'm Bob Seska here in Pennsylvania. That's Elvis Dingledine in Nebraska. The show brought to you by Bubble Genius and Pomegranate Journeys. Should have done that at the top of the show because if you're listening for the first time, you don't know who the hell's talking. Yeah. I'm Bob.
Hi, by the way.
That's
nice to meet you.
Yeah, that's.
Hope you're not a baby boomer, but if you are, fuck you.
Oh, my God. Pure products, pure genius. It's Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com. .com. Hilarious, all-natural, eco-friendly products for bath, body, and mental well-being for the holidays. If you're not buying from liberal, independent retailers, well, I'm going to come to your house and smack you silly. That's going to happen. That's a bunch of specials. I want to get to some of the Bubble Genius holiday specials later on in the show. But we do have a brand new Bubble Genius commercial. It's got that new commercial smell, is what it's got. So here we go.
Welcome to Bubble Genius.
All right, stick them up.
Stick? Judging from your odor, I assume you want our pit stop deodorant stick.
What the? Give me all your loot.
Oh, okay. Here you go. It's our Soapy Jones locker treasure chest.
What are you? Some kind of wise guy?
Okay, one wise guy's holiday perfume.
Perfume? What do you think I am? Why I otter?
Yes, sir. Our why I otter soap. Otters are cute, aren't they?
Hey, that is kind of cute. You're not so bad for a girl.
You're not so bad yourself, you big mug.
Oh, you mean this coconuts hot cocoa mug soap?
By Jove, I think he's got it.
www.bubblegenius.com.
Right.
Crazy girls.
Yeah, make sure to enter, by the way, enter your promo code, Bob and Elvis, BOBANDELVIS. Get 15% off your entire order at www.bubblegenius.com. Seriously, I mean, you start buying now because we're really damn close to holidays. So, today's show also brought to you by Pomegranate Journeys at www.pomegranate.travel. The cure for the common vacation. Pomegranate combines several of my favorite things in the entire world. Food, wine, and bicycling. Folks at Pomegranate Journeys see adventure travel differently. They know that a European active vacation is much more than just a bike and a hotel. And for that reason, they knew that just traveling the countryside from hotel to hotel would never get them where they wanted to go. They seek to deliver a sensory-rich journey at the heart of each travel experience through France and Italy. To this end, Pomegranate is committed to a limited choice of select destinations and itineraries, as well as a small group sizes. In a travel market saturated with volume and confusing choices, the itineraries and suppliers are unique to Pomegranate Journeys, as is their history in the field. So if you like bicycling, I mean, it doesn't really even matter. I mean, if you're not into cycling, there's like, they do hiking trips too. And if you want to try it, I mean, there's stuff for beginners, like beginner level cycling. And you really can't see the countryside really adequately from a bus or a car or anything like that. You want to take your time, and I mean, there's always that goal at the end of the day. You get to that amazing, amazing meal at the end of a long, long day in some of the most beautiful landscape imaginable. So go over and sign up for their newsletter at www.pomegranate.travel. Follow them on Twitter at Planet Palm, and make sure to friend them on Facebook. You get all the alerts and everything you need to know about Pomegranate Journeys, www.pomegranate.travel.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go.
Please
subscribe
do.
To the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Right. So we were talking about baby boomers and being quite generous and even keeled about them.
Yes, if you're just joining us in the bottom half of the hour. Hi, baby boomers. We love you.
Yeah, really. Really.
And all you've done for this country.
Well, I mean, historically, they're going to be seen as that high watermark, baby boomers, yeah. in terms of generational prosperity.
Oh, sure.
Because,
I mean, look at the world that their, you know, their parents bequeathed them. I mean, we were a juggernaut.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
An unstoppable military and economic force. We converted factories, you know, we converted consumer factories into warfare operations and back again, you know, overnight, and, you know, started turning out refrigerators the day after, you know, peace treaties were signed and never looked back.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think in the long run, that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
We shifted from really, when you compress time down, when you crunch it down, you know, there was just this series of galactic, you know, that book, Shock Doctrine. You know, you sort of think about how things, massive change happens in these shocking ways. And you had the Great Depression and then World War II and then just the absolute boom times of, you know, post-war America. And those three things combined just create almost a mythology that I think we're paying for that, all that now, that sense of American exceptionalism and you know, we can do anything. Ah! We're just not making anything anymore. You know, mm-hmm. we just don't do anything anymore.
Yeah.
I used to think, especially in the internet bubble, I would be in these meetings where someone would come in and say, all right, we're going to sell Kerm furlers online. We're going to be the number one. And suddenly these people would have millions of dollars in startup
right.
money.
Yeah.
And we'd all look at each other like, what the fuck is going on here? Even though it was profiting us enormously.
Mm-hmm.
They would have an IPO. They'd say, we're Kerm furling with kermfurler.com. And nobody would know what it was or why, or there was no need for it as long as it was online.
Yeah.
And they would make these kids, these teenagers, millionaires overnight with absolutely nothing to show for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's, to me, the difference. Where we've come now, it's in our economy now. You could turn if you could throw a single switch and shut NASDAQ off. There's all that money is just bits. It's just data. There's nothing in it. I was hearing this thing the other day about how banks are now this bloated, enormous percentage of of the money in the system is just going to pay banks fees and mm-hmm. service charges and stuff. Where they used to be, where banks just the only thing a bank used to do is provide capital at reasonable rates, and now they're these instruments. They don't. There's nothing behind it. It's just there's nothing there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we weren't. I don't think our generation was necessarily nefarious about the internet bubble. We were dumb fucks about it.
Exactly.
I mean, we were handed this great opportunity.
That were in their 20s running major divisions of a major company who had no fucking idea what they were doing.
No idea. No, I mean, you would not believe the number of people, and I was smoking $100 bill cigars. You know, it was at that time. I mean, it was insane the amount of money that was flying around with no business models whatsoever. I mean,
idea. No, not even a business model would be. I mean, that's like the Holy Grail. Not even a fucking spreadsheet anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, one day my boss literally walked to my desk, handed me a check that he had just had somebody down the hall cut for $7,500. $7,500. Uh-huh. He said, "We had this laying around. We didn't want to have it on the books for next quarter. So here you go. Good job on that thing."
Yeah.
He literally said, "Good job on that thing." I had absolutely no respect for myself. I was like, I felt really bad about that money. I was like, oh, fuck. I didn't do anything for this.
Right.
In fact, on the account that he was talking about, when I was sitting in a conference room in San Francisco with a group of idiots, and they said, they looked me right in the eye, and they said, "Next time, why don't you send a real engineer?" That's the account that they gave me $7,500 on as a good job. Yeah. The client told me to send a real engineer is how bad how awful I was at that.
Mm-hmm.
$7,500, ladies and gentlemen.
Right. And here's insane. A very similar story. Remember that at that time, it was 2000, summer of 2000. Steven Spielberg and those guys and Ron Howard started up this thing called pop.com.
I remember that.
And we signed, my animation studio signed a contract with pop.com where they were going to pay us $10,000. And we ended up producing nothing.
Oh, yeah. Nothing. Pop.com produced nothing.
Not a single thing. They never went online. Pop.com never actually existed. They blew through $65 million and never went online. Never. Yeah. They did not have a website.
WorldCom, we had meetings about Pop.com. We were in the process. We never built it because it never went online. But we were in the process of bulking up the UUNet, the WorldCom backbone, you know, with capacity to deal with the demand that they promised.
Yeah.
I went overnight from a business model and a deal where I would not talk to you if you would not write me my business unit $100,000 check. I wouldn't even look at you.
Right.
We went from that to turning business to telling people that their business models were for shit and that we wouldn't do business with them because they had no idea what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was literally overnight. We had to change from they're just dying to throw money at us to the point where we're like, we now realize the insanity of what we're doing and we have to stop this because every one of our deals was underwater. Every one of our deals was underwater.
Uh-huh.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah,
I've never actually witnessed a bubble pop, but that one just popped right in our faces.
It really did.
We all witnessed it.
It really did. I mean, I signed this another deal with, and I don't mind saying, with, you remember Icebox?
Yeah.
Icebox.com. They were going to rule the world as far as internet cartoons and entertainment and shit like that. I signed a $600,000 deal with them. $600,000. Guaranteed contract. We produced maybe five cartoons.
Yeah.
Five cartoons. Short cartoons for the internet. Wow. $600,000. There was
Jesus
a lot of money.
Christ.
A lot of money flying around. We didn't see hardly any of it. But we had these, because we did have guaranteed contracts, which meant they were pay or play. They were either, you know, you don't produce anything with us, you're still going to have to pay us.
Oh, all ours were pay or play.
Yeah.
We had the, that's why when I moved from WorldCom, when they told me to leave WorldCom and went right to where I am now, my job was to take every single wholesale dial contract, which was wholesale dial was you bought up, millions of port hours for dial-up back when there still was such a thing as dial-up, and you resell them, right? So you buy up these ports at wholesale price and you resell them. My new job was to go through every one of those contracts and get them out of being underwater because they were all take or play and none of them were doing any business. All these companies would come to us and say, "We got this. we've got a built-in consumer base. We've got a built-in customer base that loves us and they love our brand and they're going to buy dial-up from us at tens and tens of 20s and thousands of users. And I'd have to sit at this desk and look at them and go, no, they won't. They won't. They won't. And then, no, I've got a list right here. I've got a spreadsheet. I've got 25,000 people ready to sign up. And I go, no. No, they won't. They'll go to AOL. They'll go to AOL. That's it.
Right.
I mean, we just saw this massive, every single company in the world wanted to be their own ISP at one point in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And we had to say no. We had to, no. Sorry, you don't know what to talk about. They won't because no one will. No one, it's AOL. That's it.
That's it. Yeah.
That's it. That's it. It's, and that's what, and that's why pop.com failed. That's why, because you had to have, you had to be first and you had to have buzz,
yeah.
You know, and you just can't create that.
No,
you don't go out, it's Stephen King says it about writing a bestseller. You can't write a bestseller. You can't aim it like a cruise missile. You don't know what you've got until it's there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then it's huge. Right. And then you throw money at
that's
it.
That's right. Everyone,
you can't create it.
Yeah. I mean, everyone in content thought that they could somehow manufacture or create a template for making viral videos.
Exactly.
For viral
you
cartoons.
Absolutely cannot.
You can't.
Some 6-year-old with a webcam and his cat is going to be viral tomorrow, and your shit that costs $65 million will not.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, they were doing deals. Yeah. Pop.com was doing deals with Larry David. Larry David had a contract with him. John Kay from Ren and Stimpy and Spumco had a contract with him. Everyone had a deal. Everyone had a deal with Pop.com. And I imagine it was. I mean, we had sort of a minor thing even. I mean, it was just for one small show. But these other guys, big names, had ongoing contracts. Now, here's the other strange thing, and this is where baby boomers fucked us. Because things started to recover again about midway through this past decade.
Yes.
And I'm speaking selfishly about my general area of expertise, which is online entertainment and content. And things started to pick up again. You had a, sort of a boom with mobile there for a while, but that sort of evolved into, well, we're going to do online entertainment, streaming media. Mm-hmm. And
it was about the time that YouTube came out.
Exactly. And we're going to do it right this time. We're going to have business models. Okay.
Yeah,
we're
gonna, and it's going to be user driven, right?
Right?
So the content is user driven.
User driven. And then the user driven stuff is going to support brandable original content.
Yeah.
And that's what started to build up and build up and build up to a high watermark of about early 2008. And then fuck you, Gen X. Yeah. The economy is going to take a crash and burn. Deepest recession since the Great Depression, and it's all going to go to shit. So we get fucked
because what the baby boomers want, the neocon, they want war. Mm-hmm. You know, they want terror.
They want war, terror.
They want
exactly.
Yeah, it's.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what I mean. I don't know if it's going to be nanotechnology or green industry or what. I don't know what the next big thing will be because there always will be. I mean, there's always something.
Sure.
And every generation has its Luddites who say, well, we've invented everything. Let's close the patent offices, or the scientists who say there's just nothing left to discover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we've smashed the atom and we've done this. Every generation has that. And then some quantum leap comes in. I just hope that whatever the next thing is, it's managed correctly. It's managed by smart people that,
yeah.
You know, that don't just, because what tends to happen is the machinery of industry moves in, or of capitalism, I should say, and takes over, you know, say, well, how can we slap a brand on this and make a shitload of money over it, you know, overnight about it, and then, you know, leave it to die a slow starving death. That just seems to be the model of capitalism. HW Brands has a new book out about the history of capitalism that I just picked up. I haven't read yet, but I'm dying to. He's great. He wrote a great book about FDR,
yeah.
Traitor to His Class. Great book. But it's all about the history of capitalism.
Yeah, I mean, and here's the big contradiction that we're looking at, because I mean, and this speaks not necessarily to baby boomers or anything like that. I mean, this is the broader economy.
Yeah.
We can't have any more of these bubbles, and I really felt like the Obama administration was moving towards an economic policy that created slow and steady growth, and that's what we were kind of getting. I mean, the unemployment numbers are still high, but everything else is kind of ticking upwards in a non-bubble kind of way. The stock market, I think the Dow's moving a little fast, but it's not, I don't think it's bubble-ish.
No, the Dow is out of its fucking mind. If you really look at it, if you chart it sort of short-term and get the graph, it looks like fucking Bart Simpson's hair.
Yeah.
It's out of control, and that's not good. The volatility in it, it's down. I mean, every little scrap of news sends these people into apoplexy, the spazzy white guys.
Yeah.
That's terrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, down 170 one day, up 250 the next. It makes no fucking sense.
Yeah, I mean, CNBC and Fox Business Channel, those guys make it actually worse. Because you tune in, just try to watch. If you think watching Glenn Beck for an hour is enough to drive you to insanity, and to exhaustion first, and then to insanity. Try to watch CNBC for any length of time. I mean, it's literally like watching, I don't know, a bunch of hyperkinetic monkeys hurling shit at each other and screaming. I mean, it's literally like ongoing, all day long, every day.
Yeah.
All day, and because everything is a crisis, then they get 9 windows up on the screen. One of them is always Larry Kudlow or Lars Kudlow, and then another one is Jim Cramer, and they're fucking screeching at each other about nonsense. I mean, it's literally like a Citibank.
Yeah, I mean, we think the 24-hour news cycle is something, but the 24-hour financial cycle. Don't know how anybody parses that. I don't know what. I mean, I can't imagine being one of these guys, one of these day traders, one of these hedge fund dickwads. I can't imagine. The only good thing, I think, about that industry is that it must produce massive early death in the people that run it. Like, if you're a hedge fund monkey, not one of the fucking, guy with the yacht, who has a yacht for his yacht. Not that guy. I'm talking about the monkey on the floor who has to run the phones and is drinking Maalox in like 40-gallon tanks, right? That guy, hopefully the hedge fund industry produces short lifespans.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can hope for the hedge fund. The only good thing that comes out of that is that it kills its employees quickly.
Yeah.
Because because you've got to be tuned into that, right? You've got to be watching CNBC like all day to understand these. Like, I watch Trading Places all the time. Yeah. I love that movie. It's hysterical. I still don't understand anything about the plot at the end.
No,
I don't know what the fuck they did.
Know.
You know, I'm so clueless about how it works.
Yeah.
But I get the idea that there's this report and they buy up a lot of shit and then they sell it and then they buy it again and they sell it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. All I know is the Duke and Dukes got fucked, right? And that's great. But these guys understand that, and they got to look at these little blips and these numbers, and they got to listen to Kudlow and Cramer scream at each other, and that's their life. So I take some satisfaction in that.
Yeah, and by the way,
shaving their life off them.
All of these progressive fans of Dylan Radigan, just remember, he was a spazzy white guy in Lower Manhattan. He was responsible for a lot of this bullshit that suddenly he's seeing the light. But, meanwhile, I spent, back when the economy was kind of looking good for me, I wanted to, to take a little bit of my savings and kind of, buy some mutual funds and things like that I had never done before. And so I started, just sort of dipping my foot into that world. And I started watching CNBC for a while. And it was remarkably it was just constant stress, just watching that ticker.
Yeah.
And just watching the Dow, watching the NASDAQ, and then the screeching going on all around that. Yeah. I had to stop. And when I went back and started watching MSNBC again regularly, it was like,
yeah, exactly. The calm, cool sounds of politics.
The calmness, by contrast, was staggering.
That's a metaphor. I mean, that's a direct metaphor for those, for those two worlds. I mean, for that industry in general, is just the absolute chaos. I mean, what was it the other day? Not the other day. It was a couple months ago now. But that one trader glitch that caused like an almost immediate tank out. That, he put there was a zero or bad zero in there or something. And it's like, what? Oh my God. What? I don't know if you used to read Tom Clancy back when he could write a good book.
Yeah.
But the last one I think I read was the one where the Japanese crashed the fucking airplane into Capitol Hill, which is how Jack Ryan became president, because basically everybody was dead. But the subplot in that was a simultaneous attack on Wall Street. where they got, and it, you know, Tom Clancy tell you how to build a fucking nuclear bomb, I mean, mm-hmm. literally in his books. But long story short, they crashed the Dow, they crashed Wall Street, the machinery of it. And Jack Ryan's big idea, because he's a smart guy, was, let's just say it didn't happen. So they took the numbers from right before the crash, and they just rebooted everything and plugged those numbers in. They just cooked right along. And I'm like, you know what? Oh, my God. If that system is that butt-fuck backwards, and, you know, if that's – first of all, if you can crash it at all, oh, my God. Second of all, if you could just put it back together again by just ignoring the crash, oh, my God, times 10.
Yeah.
Oh, what the fuck? It's just this ticker. I mean, back in the old days, there was paper that came out of a thing. At least there was paper. Mm-hmm. You know, a little stock ticker that ticket, ticket, ticket. Now it's just – you can just throw a switch and all of our finances are gone.
Yeah.
It's just all data somewhere. It's right. Like NASDAQ. It just doesn't – there's no – nothing behind it. Mm-hmm. It's just data. It's just bits.
Well, and again, going – I mean, back to my original point from like 9 hours ago. I mean, yeah. we can't have any more bubbles, and we're watching the economy.
Will,
but we will. You know why? Because people are demanding them now. We want unemployment to go from 9.6 to 6 now.
Yeah. Tomorrow.
Now.
Right.
Right now.
So make me a bubble.
Make me a bubble. Exactly.
Cram people in it.
We know how destructive it is to create these bubbles. But yet we're too fucking impatient. We're like little fucking children.
Oh,
we need the unemployment to be. I mean, it sucks to be out of a job. It absolutely sucks to be out of a job right now. Believe me. I mean, I was flirting with that for quite a significant length of time during the recession. And but I mean, it can't happen right away. Otherwise, we're going to be even more seriously fucked, you know, 2 years from now when that bubble bursts, when the employment bubble bursts.
Yeah.
You know, because.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just we gotta be patient with it. We cannot be pushing for more of this bullshit that's put us into this situation in the first place.
Well, patient is not no one ever describes an American, you know, or the American ethos as patient.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not in our nature.
Well, and then meanwhile.
China, Japan is patient. I mean, they've got a what's their calendar on? 10,600 and something now. I mean, those guys are patient. We're not patient. We're Americans, goddammit.
But meanwhile, pass fucking unemployment benefits. You motherfuckers on Capitol Hill, you helped to cause this shit. All right? And now you fucking Republicans, you helped to cause this shit. Now you're pulling the rug out from everybody.
Yeah.
And then in order to, you know, give, what is it, $100,000 to every single millionaire in the country in tax breaks, which they're going to save, and they're not going to invest, you bullshitters.
No, it's,
you fucking liars.
I won't even have that argument anymore. It's such a fait accompli that tax cuts aren't stimulative, that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
I mean, that should just be common fucking dogma by now. I don't understand anyone who can look at compare the charts of Bush tax rates and Bush economic growth and tell me that shit works.
Mm-hmm.
Look at any. I don't even want to have that discussion anymore.
Yeah, no, it's like, that's the biggest lie. I mean, that's what they get away with. They get away with we make the Bush tax rates, we extend them. You know, it's going to create jobs, and if we eliminate the tax rates, we roll them back. Well, that's going to hurt jobs. Well, what the fuck? They've been around for 10 years, those tax rates. Have they created
jobs?
Jobs have flatlined. Wages have flatlined. Right. I mean, how are they allowed to get away with this? And I'm not just blaming the press for this, cable news. I'm talking about the Democrats. The Democrats are just laying down and endorsing it and playing along with it. And now it seems as though the White House is going along with it as well, with no sense whatsoever of what they're going to get in return. What any of us are going to get in return for that. It's just a one-sided, it's George McFly getting his textbook slapped out of his hands and bending over to pick him up, and then they're kicking him in the ass and then sticking a kick me sign on his back.
Yeah.
And he's going, ha, 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 you guys. Oh, you guys. I'll be over
first
thing.
We just have to hope
that
Obama is George McFly post Marty McFly remake.
That's
right.
Right.
That Obama has some plan and that he's going to punch Biff's lights out. You know, at the end,
Mr. President, if you put your mind to it, you can accomplish anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Today's show brought to you by Bubble genius.
You still just can't get that right.
I just can't. I don't know why. I mean, it's been like Sarah Finowitz. We need to pay royalties to him for some reason. Yeah. He was mentioning his shit on every show. And did I mention the promo code? I mean, it's now time. You really want to use your Bob and Elvis promo code. BOBANDELVIS. Get 15% off your entire order. Pure products, pure genius at bubblegenius.com. Some holiday soaps. This is great. This is something that you're going to run out to and buy an order right now, Elvis. Glow with God. It's their glowy baby Jesus soap on a rope.
Oh, yeah. I'm all over that.
Lights the way. It lights the way to sudsy salvation. And they're, and for our Jewish friends, Schwitzbusters. Oi, do we know from schmutz, says Bubble Genius. Wash it away with our menorah and Star of David bath bars. They're sacrilegious. And then the O Little Soap of Bethlehem adds holiday twinkle to your soap dish with their collection of holiday light bulb soaps. This is too great.
Does it really say they're sacrilegious?
No, I used that. I added that.
That's pretty clever.
That's from The Simpsons. That's when, remember that episode where I think Homer ends up with a waffle on the ceiling of his house, and it forms a cross, and he goes, sacrilegious.
No, I don't remember that.
That's Homer Simpson. I wish I could take credit for that. Okay, give yourself another reason to catch a kiss from your beloved in the shower. Their Berry Merry Christmas mistletoe soap on a rope makes showering with one you love even funner. And bonus, it's a buck off through December 6th. And even the nicest people should have a little naughty, too, which is why they're putting their own medium-sized naughty lump of coal soap on sale all month long. These cute little bags hold chunks of cranberry-scented coal and are sure to amuse everyone on your list. Bubble Genius strives to be good to your skin while also being good to the planet. Most of their packaging is recyclable. They source their ingredients as close to home as possible, thereby supporting other local and domestic businesses while cutting down on fossil fuel consumption by not having stuff shipped from across the globe. They do their best to use organic ingredients when they're accessible and affordable, and their soaps are free of chemical detergents and surfactants, and it's all handcrafted.
Yep.
I mean, Paula from Bubble Genius is just down there slaving over molds. She's making the handcrafting the molds and making the soaps. And
there she is.
Operation Mayhem, you know.
Up to her first ass rule, and soap.
First rule of Operation Mayhem is we don't talk about Operation Mayhem.
That's right.
www.bubblegenius.com.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
And support your liberal businesses. I see you in Target buying holiday gifts. I'm going to smack you. Upside down. So we've lost all of our baby boomer listeners.
Yeah, well, good ones. That are listening aren't the problem. They know that.
Yeah.
The ones that are listening aren't gay intolerant and fucking lactose intolerant.
Exactly. And when we talk about these guys, we're targeting specific types of baby boomers.
Yeah. All right. The McCain's.
It's not, but, I mean, we're not afraid to make blanket statements and across-the-board accusations.
No.
All you fucking baby boomers, except the ones we like. Except the ones who give us stuff, like
my dad and those guys. Yeah.
Right. Except the ones who.
I'm not sure my dad's helping much.
Right. Well, I mean, your dad must be. I mean, I think your dad is pre baby boom.
No, right in the middle.
Really?
He's born in 1944.
Oh, well then, okay. Then your dad is like what, 6 years older than my dad. My dad was pre baby boom, pre war. 1938. He was born 1938.
Oh Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, so my dad accepted.
My parents started pretty young, yeah. I guess. My mom was 19 when she had me.
Oh, really? My mom was 21. So, yeah, I guess that is pretty young.
Well, that's pretty standard for back then.
Yeah. Anyway, good Lord. Did you see this? That Ed Rollins has gone after Sarah Palin now?
Oh, my God. It's just going to turn into a feeding frenzy.
It's going to be so fucking great.
Oh, I can't wait.
So fucking great.
I just hope it doesn't blow its load too early. And there's a risk that it happens way too early.
Yeah.
That they need to hold off a little bit.
Here's what Ed Rollins said. And this guy, this is a top level former Reagan administration official.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah. And a sharp guy.
Sharp
and,
guy, yeah.
I mean, he was in that, Atwater doc.
Exactly. And yeah. And you wonder, you look at a guy like Ed Rollins, and he seems so smart, and you wonder, how could he have those politics?
I don't think he's an ideologue, like a raving. I just think he's a smart guy that'll cut a bitch. I mean, that guy looks like he will fucking shiv you, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Like the way he talks in that Atwater documentary, you're just like, I would never cross that guy. And Atwater had the balls to cross him. He was his protege, right? I mean, Atwater double crossed that guy. Mm-hmm. I would never double cross, but he looked a little softer and a little more like a bear back then.
Yeah.
Now he looks like he would crush your skull.
No, you don't want to. You don't want to fuck with Ed Rollins.
Fuck with that guy.
Right. Right.
So what did he say?
He's got okay. Yeah, Ed Rollins is like Burl Ives with an M16.
Like Burl Ives that would cut a bitch.
Like pumped up. He's like Burl Ives, like you know, on roids.
Yeah, with a filthy mouth. Right.
Right?
Through that Atwater documentary, he's cussing like a sailor.
Yeah, have a holly jolly fuck you.
Fucking, yeah.
Yeah. So Ed Rollins says about Sarah Palin, you're a media star and a great curiosity. You were plucked out of political obscurity because of the whim of a presidential contender, John McCain, who didn't know you and made you into an overnight sensation. You performed well for 3 weeks in the campaign, did better than expected against Joe Biden in the debate, and then you self-destructed.
Ouch.
Which is exactly what fucking happened.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think she even did that well during the debate. We forget. All she did was defy expectations. The expectation in that debate with Joe Biden was that she was going to choke on her own vomit at some point.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
she
yeah.
was going to, like walk out on stage, trip over her shoe, swallow the microphone, give Joe Biden a noogie.
And light herself on fire.
And light herself on
like
fire.
A Buddhist monk.
And that was
absolutely. She beat the expectation, but if you analyze the thing she said, I mean, she literally, any debate, and I don't care if it's the Harvard debating yard or whatever, any debate where you have to look the moderator in the face and go, oh, I'm just not going to answer the questions you're asking me. That's a fail. I was in debate club for 8 years. I know you're not allowed to say, oh, you know what, moderator? That's a swell question, but fuck you. I'm not answering that question. You can't do that. And she did that. That's not a win.
No. And we forget that she, you know what she botched in that debate?
Yeah.
The role of the vice presidency. The role of the, she could not define what the vice president does.
Still can't.
12 hours later on Fox News Channel, still couldn't do it. You know, you think one of her advisors would
absolute definition of word salad.
It was word salad, totally word salad. And then the next morning was even worse. You would think at some point an advisor would pull her aside. You know, Sarah,
stop talking.
Vice president, don't answer that question. Try to move to something else because here's what the vice president does. Vice president breaks ties in the Senate, and that's about it.
That's it.
Don't say anything else. Does not preside. Oh shit! I shouldn't even say that because then you're going to think what I'm telling you not to say is what you should say. You know,
it's her inexhaustible ego that we have never seen a narcissist like this person on the political stage ever.
No.
I'm not kidding you. And this is what is going to drive her to run. That's why she will run and why she will blow out so hard and fail so spectacularly is there has never been an ego and a bubble, a protective bubble like this, like that surrounds this woman. It's unbelievable. A train wreck.
Yeah. It really is. I mean, every single tweet has got some fucked upness about it.
Some dig, some little shit. She just like that Facebook thing she posted on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
About her little flub about North and South Korea. I mean, fuck. I'll give her the benefit of the doubt that sometimes you slip up and you say the wrong one. I mean, maybe we would like a president not to make that particular mistake. You know, because basically in the history of armed conflict, the North has always been the bad guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, North Korea, North Vietnam, the North is the bad guy, Sarah. But I'll give you that break. But then to make a pissy, bitchy little Facebook posting about it, yeah, like a 12-year-old. Mm-hmm. She's a child. Yep. She's absolutely still in high school. She has never recovered from whatever ass fucking she took in high school mentally about, I don't mean to say that Sarah Palin was anally raped. I mean to say that all of us took some sort of mental cruelty in high school. Mm-hmm. Whatever it was that she got, she's never gotten over.
Yeah.
Because she's still playing, she plays Facebook like she's 12 years old. Yeah. OMG, LOL, President Obama says it too.
Yeah.
That's presidential, you mm-hmm. stupid cow.
She's just no self-respect, no dignity. Maybe she's got self-respect. No, she's got no dignity yeah, whatsoever, no integrity. She, I mean, for God's sake, that Facebook post, she had no sense whatsoever of the fact that here she's talking. I mean, she's accusing the president of also making gaffes. Because you know what? He's the president, and he's out there speaking every day. Some of it extemporaneous.
All the time
with cameras pointing at. But you know what else? He's also a constitutional scholar. Yeah. He's also, you know, he also has
what
a brain in his head.
The benefit of the doubt.
Exactly. Sarah Palin, on the other hand, has no fucking clue. And so when she says North Korea instead of South Korea, that reveals a broader dumb stupid.
Right.
Okay.
But first of all, why is anyone talking to her about South Korea, about Korea at all?
Right.
What bona fides has, what credential has she ever produced mm-hmm. that no one, that hasn't been a laugh line or a Saturday Night Live gag that makes us think that she has anything to say about Korea that anyone should take seriously?
Yeah.
That's my thing. When President Obama steps up and talk, anybody, Hillary Clinton, anyone who is a serious politician, you go, oh, well, maybe there's some studiousness behind that. Maybe they're, you know, maybe they've got, he's got advisors, and maybe there's somebody behind that with a fucking brain. Who on Sarah Palin's team do we go, oh, well, thank God she's got that guy.
Yeah.
No one. I mean, I don't even know who her team is. A bunch of high schoolers that run her Facebook page?
Yeah. And she can't possibly be listening to them. I mean, she may have a brain trust in there somewhere, but I mean, I think at the end of the day, she does whatever the fuck she wants to do, and she says whatever she wants to say. Because you know what? And if her team had any influence whatsoever, they would, again, just like after the debate, they would pull her aside and say, "Hey, you know what, Sarah? First Amendment doesn't protect someone against their employer; only protects them against the government." And she would go, "Oh, you know what? You're right. Maybe I should not say that." Repeatedly on Twitter every fucking day.
Yeah.
You know, but she does. She continues to do it. She sits there and she goes after a few gaffes by a constitutional scholar. Meanwhile, she's on Twitter every day, entirely misunderstanding the First Amendment.
Yeah.
First Amendment of the Constitution. Doesn't matter to her. She can't get the First Amendment of the Constitution. She can't get the role of the vice president. What the hell is she doing?
When she's running for it.
It's, yeah.
That's what's so terrifying. That word mm-hmm. salad was in the middle of a campaign in which you're vying for that job.
Yeah.
Position flexible.
Position flexible.
Position flexible. What are you fucking talking? That guy should have pushed her off that balcony. That guy should have, that should have been like a dead zone moment where you go, oh my God, this person is terrible. And then just shove her over that balcony.
Yeah. Here's the quote. Here's the quote. One of the things
you can't even do it justice.
Yeah,
the grinny. You know, you can hear just the Joker face uh-huh. that she's making. The pageant face. I've been to a lot of pageants, and it's the face that these contestants make when they don't have any fucking idea what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. They just want you to like their pretty smiley
yeah.
face.
Yeah, here it is. 47 seconds of genius.
One of the things you talked about last night was the flexibility that the vice presidency has.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you mean by that?
That thankfully our founders were wise enough to say we have this position and it's constitutional. Vice president will be able to be not only the position flexible, but it's going to be sort of those other duties as assigned by the president. A simple thing.
Yeah, there you go.
What the fuck?
What the hell does that mean?
Oh my! I just every time I hear that is the very definition of word salad. There was just so much going on there. You could not chart that sentence with a blackboard the size of Kentucky.
I've got the YouTube video up here, freeze framed, and Carl Cameron from Fox News Channel is just, he's got this look on his face. He's just got this squinty,
yeah. Like, position. What? She has to get in. She starts everything with like that. When Katie Couric asked her what media she, what magazines and newspapers she reads, she always has to slide this thing in with the Couric thing. She goes again with a great respect for the media. Like I'm not, you know, like the unknown dog whistle. Like the thing that isn't said there is, oh well, fuck media, fuck media. It's all liberal lamestream anyway. So I'm gonna slide that in there. So with this word salad, she's like, well, with our brilliant founding fathers, right? They're so, because they're so wide. Oh, the founding fathers, all the jackasses in red states are going, oh, founding fathers. Right? She said that. Yeah. It's just, it's unbelievable what's going on in this woman's head.
It's a simple
dancing
thing.
Dancing cows, yeah. Black and white cartoon cows.
Uh-huh. It's a simple thing, though. And it's a simple thing, by the way. It's so simple. And you know what that is? That's her saying to herself, this is simple. I should know this.
Yes.
Perhaps.
It's panic talk. It's your mouth is moving while your brain is going, you know, full alert. You have no idea what you're talking about. Word salad. And that's what happens when your mouth is running and your brain is scrambling.
Yeah.
I've done that a million times. I've made word salads like that a million times when I'm caught on a call on something I should know and don't. I just start making shit up. And there's a great deal of brain processing power dedicated to the fact that I know this is all bullshit.
Yeah.
And that is hugely distracting. Mm-hmm. What she should have said when she took that question was, well, I probably shouldn't have said flexible because really it's just two things. Mm-hmm. It's basically be vice president and break ties in the Senate. That's fucking it. I mean, there's no flexibility. There's no literal flexibility to it. It's yes. I mean, she has a point that the different vice presidents take on different roles because it is such a amorphous thing.
Yeah.
But she just made this word salad. It's incomprehensible.
I like to see
anyone take this person seriously.
Yeah. Right. Break this down. Structure this thing. That thankfully our founders were wise enough to say we have this position and it's constitutional. Vice president will be able to be not only the position flexible, but it's going to be those other duties as assigned by the president. A simple thing.
So simple thing. She had to wrap it. She had to crown that turd with a, you know, to let you know that you're the dumbass if you don't get what I'm saying. It's a simple thing.
Vice president will be able to be not only the position flexible.
That's not a sentence.
And that's with debate prep. Some of the brightest minds in Republican politics instructing her repeatedly over weeks and weeks.
Yeah. I always think of those guys coming out of it like the shrinks come away from Bob in What About Bob?
Right, with the,
you know,
the
those guys just come out of there like, I can't deal with her anymore. She's all yours. Right. They're just ruining careers left and right.
Uncontrollably twitchy eye, you know, just like that eye just going.
Yeah, right.
Fuck, what is this?
Sitting in a corner somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's scary is I still believe that there is the possibility for a perfect storm that would elect her president.
No, there's none whatsoever.
Really?
You can stop worrying about that.
No.
None whatsoever. Do you think literally there is any notable percentage? I won't say any one person because that I mean there is crazy in this world. But there's any notable percentage, a changeable, like any tenth of any percent in the wide electorate of people who voted for Obama in 2008 that would vote for Palin in 2012? If your answer to that is yes, then you're insane. There is not. There is not an appreciable difference-making percentage of human beings in this country who voted for Obama in 2008 that would vote for Palin in 2012.
That doesn't need to happen.
Story.
It doesn't need to happen because a lot of those people could vote for Michael Bloomberg. I mean, if you have a three-way race, and you know, though he would never get elected, you throw a Ross Perot into the mix. Suddenly, Sarah Palin only needs 42% of the vote.
No, look at the effect she had on fundraising in the Obama campaign. If it was a head-to-head, Obama would have ad buys times a trillion against. I mean, it would just be a media blitz against. He would have so much money. I would put a second mortgage on my house to donate up to the up to the cap.
Yeah.
Just to beat her. Mm-hmm. It would be ridiculous. And I think government, I mean, you look at the serious politicos that are coming out against her. I think business would too. I mean, I think business would know what kind of fucking disaster this country would be.
No. They would understand that she would be a puppet. That she would be just like George W. Bush. That they would get. They would go in there and they would get. They would be able to buy and sell that administration.
Now, come on.
They would
now,
have
to be,
free reigns.
Bush had at least the imprimatur of government. You know, he had a pretty solid base with him when he came in as far as political. Who the fuck is Palin going to surround herself with? I think people are going to – I think serious-minded people in all walks of politics and industry will be terrified
it'll be the
of
same,
the prospect of a Sarah Palin America.
It'll be the same people.
Because they know she can't be – you can't puppet master Sarah Palin. If Bush was just like, duh, you know, just kind of sleepy and stupid. You could puppet master him. You cannot puppet master a narcissist like Sarah Palin. You can't puppet master by definition means we tell you what to do and you do it. That's not her. You can't tell her anything. You can't tell her what to do or what to say. She's a complete rogue. I mean, that part is right. Going rogue is absolutely right. There's no puppetry to be mastered there. She's just a complete flake.
Can you imagine the cavalcade of firings? Like, she would be firing her entire staff and her entire cabinet.
Every week, we'd have a different chief of staff.
As soon as they would say, you know what, Sarah, maybe you should not come into the Situation Room today. She'd be like,
with Trigg, dragging your down baby around into the fucking, yeah. They go, maybe you should leave your down baby, you know, in the residence when you come down to the fucking Situation Room. Fired. We'd go a year with no joint chiefs of staff.
That's right. She'd have the TLC cameras with her too. Yeah, the TLC cameras. Yeah. We need to
White House. Woo-hoo! Yeah.
Make sure all the TLC guys have that palm print, you know, access.
Yeah.
to the Situation Room. They can all press their palm. Suddenly, there's just cameras, like live reality show cameras, in the Situation Room.
Yeah.
And it's just her, with a general suit.
And the football.
And the football. That's right.
We're all dead.
I still think it can happen. I mean, I don't think we should. I don't think we should summarily dismiss the idea. Let's put
it
down.
Not a chance. Not a chance.
So, you know, I hate to say it, but I don't know if there's going to be another show next week.
There will be. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. We're going to try to do it. Because what's happening is Elvis is traveling the first half of the week. I'm traveling the second half of the week. So at some point we will make an absolute effort to do a show. It just is probably not going to be on Thursday. It will either be way early in the week or it'll be like on Friday.
Yeah. We'll try and squeeze it in early.
We'll squeeze it in. And just once again, I want to reiterate, with the holidays coming up, get your orders into Bubble Genius now.
Yes.
Please do. And you know what? If you have a lot of money, if you have that baby boomer money, why not buy your loved one a pomegranate journey? Do that too. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. You fudge with us, you fudge with the best. We shall be back next week. So one of those days next week. All right. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Position flexible.